It is another Saturday morning at CCO Land when we talk cars, your truck, your van, and the problems you may be having with those vehicles. If you do, we'd love to hear from you. You can get some free advice, free diagnosis anyway, from ASC certified technician Nick Stauffel, who runs a place called Lloyd's Automotive on beautiful Grand Avenue in St. Paul. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Danny, and it's a very busy place on Grand Avenue lately here.
It is. Now, tell me why, because, well, you guys do great work, I know that, but is this kind of typical for good shops? People are taking care of their cars more, or what? Why so busy?
Well, the first part, I think you have it right. You know, we've been around for a really long time. We have a great following. I would say majority of our customers do the regular maintenance, which keeps us a nice flow of work. But you'll see in the next week here, as it's been warmer or more typical of a summer, more things are starting to kind of break and fail, which creates this onslaught of work. So if your car is having some issues, I would highly suggest you get on somebody's schedule sooner than later, because if this warmth continues, we'll end up being two and a half weeks behind, and that gets to be difficult to help somebody in a pinch.
Yeah, absolutely. If you do have an issue and you want to find out before you bring it in for service what could be wrong with it, call Nick or text Nick. Just one number for either, 651-461-9226. We're already starting to get calls and text messages, as a matter of fact. Now, we have talked over the years, and you talk about heat, this excessive heat that we're going to be having here in the next day and a half or so. Is actually, I remember it almost sounded counterintuitive that with the winters we've had over all these years, summer is actually tougher on batteries, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say the heat is harder on the vehicle, where the cold is probably harder on us. And I guess what I mean by that is, you know, the chemistry, the heat, things aren't designed. I mean, some things are, you know, like, you know, you have a cooling system that keeps the engine at the operating temperature. So for the most part, the engine doesn't care what the ambient temperature is once it's running. But some of these other things, like you mentioned, the battery, some of the other accessories, that heat can really add a little extra stress that can create failure or premature failure.
Yeah. Let's do this before we get too far adrift. Let's grab a phone call. Tim has been waiting there in Andover. Thanks for waiting, Tim. What is your question for Nick?
Brake pads, when brake pads get worn real bad, what further complications can occur? And then the second one is, like, when you have brake pads replaced, is it automatically that they replace the rotors? That's it.
Okay.
So if a brake pad is wearing prematurely or unevenly, you know, inner and outer pad, it can be the fault of the caliper. You know, maybe the caliper itself, the piston is seized or stuck in the hone there. Or sometimes it's just a matter of when we replace the brake pad to do a very thorough job of cleaning the slides and the pins, the area in which the brake pad slide in. You know, keep in mind that each set of brakes are in the wheel, so it sees all of the elements. It's whether it's summer, winter, snow, sleet, you know, you name it, mud, dirt, that brake pad or that brake system is getting exposed to that. So a lot of stuff can collect in those areas and start to build up and create an issue where the brake pads are not moving freely like they should, which can cause them to wear poorly. Second question about brake rotors. I would say yes, they are, at this point, a replaceable component when you do the brakes. A couple reasons. They've done a good job of trying to control the weight of vehicles to help with fuel economy and such. In doing that, the brake rotors are lighter weight, meaning that they don't last the life of the car and you don't keep resurfacing them. The other thing, too, to keep in mind is that, you know, when I started in this a long time ago, a brake job would be every 20,000, 30,000 miles. We'll see double that. So in reality, the brake rotors are lasting just as long as they used to. We just drive a lot more. So, yes, you replace them, and when you do a brake job, you have to be very thorough in your cleaning and lubricating.
I want to ask you a question. I saw a video, and, of course, we always have to watch what we watch and take for 100% truth on the Internet. But this particular video, and I've seen them before, this guy, I think he runs his own shop somewhere in the country, not here. He claimed he was asked about transmission fluid. And he said, if you're going to keep the vehicle a long time, is I believe in changing that transmission fluid every 30,000 miles. I went, what? And again, I assume that according to the manual, look at your manual, right? I mean, isn't that pretty often or no?
I would agree with you. My opinion would be that would be premature. But as you mentioned, you know, especially transmission fluid, there are some vehicles that will say it's a lifetime fill. It doesn't require service. And some don't really have the drain plug and the fill plug to really service them. So it's such a wide range. Now, my opinion is that nothing lasts forever, especially in our climate. Doing those services, following those schedules, you know, whether it's transmission fluid, brake fluid, power steering, obviously the engine oil, you need to stay on top of your maintenance because that's the lifeline of your vehicle. And by neglecting those things, you start to have more issues, which repairs are always more expensive than maintenance.
Yeah, for sure. Hang on, Nick. We're going to take a break. Just a reminder to our listeners, Nick will be taking his leave, a little less than a half hour from now. So our time goes by pretty quickly. So if you have any kind of a car care question, we just soon hear from you sooner rather than later. Any kind of a car care question, 651-461-9226. Right now in the Twin Cities, we have 75 degrees, expecting some showers. You may be seeing some in your neighborhood already. Chance of showers and thunderstorms today. There's a chance of that overnight tonight. We get up to 91 today. Right now here on CCO, 75 degrees. Stay with us. And good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. Thanks to Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive for helping you out, answering any kind of a car care question you may have. Nick, for those folks that maybe do need a little further investing in their vehicle problems, how do they find you guys at Lloyd's?
Yes, sir. So if you ever have a question or, more importantly, need a little advice, give us a call, 651-228-1316. And as you mentioned, we're on Grand Avenue in St. Paul. We're at 982 Grand on the corner of Grand and Chatsworth. And always, I'd appreciate if you checked out our website at lloydsautomotive.net.
Very good, Nick. We'll get you that information before Nick takes his leave, which is about 7:45 this morning. So as I said earlier, don't wait. If you have any kind of a car code question, we'd love to hear from you. 651-461-9226. Back to the phones we go, Nick. I think Billy's calling in from Elk River this morning. Billy, thank you. What is your question for Nick?
Thank you for having me on. I have a 2013 BMW X5 E70 model with the inline-six turbo engine, 3-liter. And I have a rough start issue. I also have a Foxwell scan tool, so not as good as the actual BMW computer, but it does go through quite a bit. I do not have any lights or notifications. I changed the coils and the plugs about 25,000 miles ago, and once it's running, it runs perfect. But every other day, every 10 starts, it gets a rough start, and I was curious if you would go to starter at that point.
I don't necessarily think starter. When you say the roughness, I'm anticipating or I'm thinking of where it kind of stumbles a little bit when you're firing the vehicle. And in that case, based on what you're describing, I think maybe the fuel injector, one or two of them, is bleeding down, meaning it's a high-pressure system. When you shut the vehicle off, it should be kind of static, but there might be an injector that's losing a little bit of pressure, so it's leaving a little bit of fuel in that cylinder. So when you go to start it, it's kind of flooded in the sense it's trying to burn off excessive fuel, so it's going to be rough stumbling. After a few moments, it clears itself up, and once it's running, it's fine. However, if those injectors get worse or to fail, you always run the risk of too much fuel getting into a cylinder, potentially creating like a hydrolock or a much more severe situation. So, you know, there's different ways you can pull a plug. You can look inside of a cylinder, let it sit overnight and kind of investigate a little bit. You might be able to watch the injectors on a scan tool to see what they're doing and what kind of time that they're operating at. So based on our quick phone call here, I would say that I'm leaning towards something with a fuel injector. Obviously, you'd have to get it into your shop or dealership, have them do a little deeper digging. Probably worth getting a look into it. And likely, if you're doing one injector, you're probably going to do them all. But I think that's the first place I would investigate.
All right. Good luck with that, Billy. Thanks for the call. If you want to send your question via text instead of a call, great, 651-461-9226. Here's a text that came in a bit ago. 2012 Pilot has 160,000 miles on it. Texter noticed a bit last summer the AC wasn't really cold, but cold enough to get along. This summer, it started off good, but now it's hit or miss. Do I need an AC charge, do you think?
Well, typically what we would do is check the level, and there's not a dipstick for their conditioning. It's a sealed system, so you'd likely need to evacuate, check out the quantity of refrigerant in the system. If it was low, the next step to do is try to determine why. And that can be a little tricky. Sometimes leaks are easy to find. Sometimes it takes a little more investigating. If the refrigerant level is full, then we start to think, is there something that's turning the compressor on and off? And the compressor is what creates the cold air. So if there's something else within the vehicle that's a problem, it might be isolated and shutting that compressor off because it is an accessory. It's not required to make the vehicle run. So two different paths there, kind of depending on where we what we see when we try to do an evacuation and check that refrigerant level.
Yeah, and there's a follow-up as far as a charge, a cost. And like you said, it's a variable. You don't know what you're going to find. If there is a leak, where is it? How is it? How is it repaired? So there's still a lot of variables no matter what we're talking about with cars, right?
Well, absolutely. And in the last handful of years, there's another newer refrigerant, which is a lesser quantity that's used. As we advance in technologies, there's always... but I would tell you on a 134A, which is most vehicles or the vehicles of yesteryear, that's probably a $150, $200 recharge. Can be more, obviously, depending on the amount of refrigerant. You know, if it has the large capacity system, it could be maybe even $300. It really depends, as you mentioned. But newer vehicles have a different refrigerant, and that can be maybe double the price. It takes less refrigerant, but it's much more costly. And the fact that there's less means that we're really particular about leaks, and that process can be a little more daunting to try to find a leak if there is one. So have it assessed. Don't overthink it. Maybe there's something as simple as an O-ring or a Schrader valve. It can be something much more extensive or expensive, but you got to start with figuring out what's going on.
So there are even in newer vehicles, there's a newer refrigerant yet.
Yes, there is. And, using general terms, I would say a vehicle that's, eight years old, the quantity of refrigerant might be a pound and a half, 2 pounds. A lot of these newer vehicles are less than a pound of refrigerant in there. Mm. And it's maybe 3 or 4 times the cost of refrigerant.
Wow.
And it's good because there's less refrigerant, there's less gases that can leak into the atmosphere. So there's positives to this stuff. Unfortunately, when things are new, they can be quite expensive. So that's the downside of it. But
yeah.
It probably is for the best.
That's the trade-off. Hang on, Nick. We're going to take a break and see what that forecast calls for. In the meantime, Nick will be taking his leave about 7:45. So if you have any kind of a car care question, we'd love to hear from you sooner rather than later. 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning once again. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. We happen to be here every Saturday right after the 7 o'clock news break with Nick Stoffel. Nick is an ASC certified technician at Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, answering a few more questions, Nick, before we run out of time. It goes by always so quickly. Texter says this, the turn signals on my 2008 Honda Ridgeline sometimes start flickering, especially in the right side. I also have some moisture inside the right headlight. Do you think the two issues are related, or do you think they're separate problems?
Well, at first I was thinking a poor connection or contact, which that moisture can create. So, yes, I think we should determine if that headlight capsule can be dried out, blown out, or if, in fact, there's a crack or something that's allowing the moisture in there. Because keep in mind, when the headlight is on, there's a lot of heat going on inside of that capsule, and that heat will create some steam. It'll work its way into the contacts and connections, which makes them poor condition, which can create some flickering and even cause the light bulbs to burn out. So that's something you probably want to get, have it looked at, try to figure out if it can be dried out or if it has to be replaced, and then you can kind of take it from there.
And as you and I have talked before, some, depending on the model and the manufacturer, some of those headlight replacements are pretty darn expensive.
We kind of tease that cars are designed to be assembled, not repaired. In some cases, that's true. There are some models out there where you actually have to remove the bumper cover to replace a headlight, which seems just really silly. But the way they're designed, you don't gain any access to the back of that capsule. So sometimes you remove that whole the whole unit itself to get the bulb replaced. So it, some are easy. Not all of them are that bad. But there's a whole variety of different designs that we deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah. Looking at a text, Nick, good morning, guys. Says, my Toyota Highlander is equipped with the stop-start function. When I replace the battery, do I need a specific type of battery for replacement? I will be replacing before the end of summer. Thanks for such an informative show. What do you think about that? Does he need a certain type of battery?
When you look in the catalog, there will be specifications for the battery. And, you know, there's something called AGM batteries. You know, it's a absorbed glass mat type battery. It's not just, it's, there's still acid and lead and such, but it's just designed differently. And most of the start-stop technology vehicles will have that. Some cases, they even have an auxiliary battery because there's a lot more going on with the vehicle, especially when you're restarting the vehicle at every stop. So you take it into your shop, or if you're doing it yourself, or you go to the parts store, you give them the application, the catalog will lead you in the right direction to get the right battery for the vehicle.
You and I have talked about batteries, and I know you sell really good stuff at Lloyd's. But is it fair to say that you kind of get what you pay for as far as batteries?
You know, we cover this often, you know, batteries, tires, oil. I'm a firm believer in, you know, you don't always have to get the very best brand, but you need to make sure you're buying quality stuff for your vehicle. The battery will last longer. You know, there's a lot of specifications, a lot of marketing with all three of those areas, quite honestly. And you have to trust where you're going. Talk to the dealership, the shop, the parts department, wherever you might be going, and kind of get their opinion and make your best informed decision. But I like to use quality, original equipment quality. It definitely shows over the length of the vehicle. My truck's about a 2012, and it doesn't burn any oil because I use a good quality oil. The tires last a really long time, and I plow snow and run up north and all around town with my kids, as you know. So I think it's worth the investment to spend a few extra dollars to buy the things that are better quality.
There's another question that we get from time to time. I haven't seen or heard for years, but basically digging through this entire paragraph, the texter wants to know, with all the different gas stations, the discount places and the big box, you know, all these different where you can buy gasoline, does the quality differ is basically their question. Is it better to go certain places rather than others, I guess, is their question.
You know, that's a matter of opinion there, obviously. But I think my best advice is go to a place that's busy, that they're replenishing that fuel. There's not a lot of stagnant fuel sitting in their tanks, which are in the ground. Can create some condensation, some moisture potential issues. So, you know, I wouldn't always chase a nickel to drive across town because you probably use more fuel to save that nickel.
That's right.
However, if a place is busy, you know, and it's a branded place, that's what I do. I don't go to only one place. I just try to stay on the places that are on the main highway. Don't, you know, get back in the backwoods, find a, you know, something off the road there. So that's just my two cents, I guess.
Okay. Final question. 2016 Kia, my lights don't come on when turned to auto. Maybe it's just too bright.
Yeah, it might be too bright. There's a light sensor likely on the dash. The switch itself, you know, that might be creating some problem there for you. So there's a couple different directions that go there. You know, you have the, once again, the schematic, the resources to do some testing there to determine if the input from the sensor is not making it back to the switch or the computer, or if when you're switching it, rotating the switch itself, if those contacts are worn out and it's not seen, that you have it on the auto setting. So there's a couple of different directions you could be headed there.
All right. And if there are issues the folks want to bring in their vehicle to see you guys at Lloyd's, how do we do that?
Absolutely. Feel free to call. Ask a couple questions here if you need to. 651-228-1316. If you're out for a walk on Grand Avenue or at the corner of Grand and Chatsworth, 982 Grand, stop and say hi. And once again, as always, I'd appreciate if you checked out our website at lloydsautomotive.net.
We will do that very thing, Nick, and we hope you can come back next Saturday.
Only if you have me.
We will do that. All right, it's a deal. Thank you. Nick Stoffel, again, ASC Certified Technician at Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Now, Jack Farrell standing by with his wine check next. Jack Farrell, of course, from Haskell's fame. And then get those lawn and garden questions ready. Julie Weisenhorn will be in next hour for our Smart Garden Show. That's straight ahead. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO. It is another Saturday morning at CCO Land when we talk cars, your car, your truck, your van, and the problems you may be having with those vehicles. If you do, we'd love to hear from you. You can get some free advice, free diagnosis anyway, from ASC Certified Technician Nick Stoffel, who runs a place called Lloyd's Automotive on beautiful Grand Avenue in St. Paul. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Danny. And it's a very busy place on Grand Avenue lately here.
It is. Now, tell me why, because, well, you guys do great work. I know that. But is this kind of typical for good shops? People are taking care of their cars more, or what? Why so busy?
Well, the first part, I think you have it right. You know, we've been around for a really long time. We have a great following. I would say majority of our customers do the regular maintenance, which keeps us a nice flow of work. But you'll see in the next week here, as it's been warmer or more typical of a summer, more things are starting to kind of break and fail, which creates this onslaught of work. So if your car is having some issues, I would highly suggest you get on somebody's schedule sooner than later, because if this warmth continues, we'll end up being two and a half weeks behind, and that gets to be difficult to help somebody in a pinch.
Yeah, absolutely. If you do have an issue and you want to find out before you bring it in for service what could be wrong with it, call Nick or text Nick. Just one number for either, 651-461-9226. We're already starting to get in calls and text messages, as a matter of fact. Now, we have talked over the years, and you talk about heat, this excessive heat that we're going to be having here in the next day and a half or so. Is actually, I remember it almost sounded counterintuitive that with the winters we've had over all these years, summer is actually tougher on batteries, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say the heat is harder on the vehicle, where the cold is probably harder on us. And I guess what I mean by that is, you know, the chemistry, the heat, things aren't designed. I mean, some things are, you know, like, you know, you have a cooling system that keeps the engine at the operating temperature. So for the most part, the engine doesn't care what the ambient temperature is once it's running. But some of these other things, like you mentioned, the battery, some of the other accessories, that heat can really add a little extra stress that can create failure or premature failure.
Yeah. I tell you what, let's do this before we get too far adrift. Let's grab a phone call. Tim has been waiting there in Andover. Thanks for waiting, Tim. What is your question for Nick?
Brake pads, when brake pads get worn real bad, what further complications can occur? And then the second one is, like, when you have brake pads replaced, is it automatically that they replace the rotors? That's it.
Okay.
So if a brake pad is wearing prematurely or unevenly, you know, inner and outer pad, it can be the fault of the caliper. You know, maybe the caliper itself, the piston is seized or stuck in the hone there. Or sometimes it's just a matter of when we replace the brake pad to do a very thorough job of cleaning the slides and the pins, the area in which the brake pad slide in. You know, keep in mind that each set of brakes are in the wheel, so it sees all of the elements. It's whether it's summer, winter, snow, sleet, you know, you name it, mud, dirt, that brake pad or that brake system is getting exposed to that. So a lot of stuff can collect in those areas and start to build up and create an issue where the brake pads are not moving freely like they should, which can cause them to wear poorly. Second question about brake rotors. I would say yes, they are, at this point, a replaceable component when you do the brakes. A couple reasons. They've done a good job of trying to control the weight of vehicles to help with fuel economy and such. In doing that, the brake rotors are lighter weight, meaning that they don't last the life of the car and you don't keep resurfacing them. The other thing, too, to keep in mind is that, you know, when I started in this a long time ago, a brake job would be every 20, 30,000 miles. We'll see double that. So in reality, the brake rotors are lasting just as long as they used to. We just drive a lot more. So, yes, you replace them, and when you do a brake job, you have to be very thorough in your cleaning and lubricating.
I want to ask you a question. I saw a video, and, of course, we always have to watch what we watch and take for 100% truth on the internet. But this particular video, and I've seen them before, this guy, I think he runs his own shop somewhere in the country, not here. He claimed he was asked about a transmission fluid. And he said, if you're going to keep the vehicle a long time, is I believe in changing that transmission fluid every 30,000 miles. I went, what? And again, I assume that according to the manual, look at your manual, right? I mean, isn't that pretty often or no?
I would agree with you. My opinion would be that would be premature. But as you mentioned, you know, especially transmission fluid, there are some vehicles that will say it's a lifetime fill. It doesn't require service. And some don't really have the drain plug and the fill plug to really service them. So it's such a wide range. Now, my opinion is that nothing lasts forever, especially in our climate. Doing those services, following those schedules, you know, whether it's transmission fluid, brake fluid, power steering, obviously the engine oil, you need to stay on top of your maintenance because that's the lifeline of your vehicle. And by neglecting those things, you start to have more issues, which repairs are always more expensive than maintenance.
Yeah, for sure. Hang on, Nick. We're going to take a break. Just a reminder to our listeners, Nick will be taking his leave, a little less than a half hour from now. So our time goes by pretty quickly. So if you have any kind of a car care question, we just soon hear from you sooner rather than later. Any kind of a car care question, 651-461-9226. Right now in the Twin Cities, we have 75 degrees, expecting some showers. You may be seeing some in your neighborhood already. Chance of showers and thunderstorms today. There's a chance of that overnight tonight. We get up to 91 today. Right now here on CCO, 75 degrees. Stay with us. And good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. Thanks to Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive for helping you out, answering any kind of a car care question you may have. Nick, for those folks that maybe do need a little further investing in their vehicle problems, how do they find you guys at Lloyd's?
Yes, sir. So if you ever have a question or, more importantly, need a little advice, give us a call, 651-228-1316. And as you mentioned, we're on Grand Avenue in St. Paul. We're at 982 Grand on the corner of Grand and Chatsworth. And always, I'd appreciate if you checked out our website at lloydsautomotive.net.
Very good, Nick. We'll get you that information before Nick takes his leave, which is about 7:45 this morning. So as I said earlier, don't wait. If you have any kind of a car code question, we'd love to hear from you. 651-461-9226. Back to the phones we go, Nick. I think Billy's calling in from Elk River this morning. Billy, thank you. What is your question for Nick?
Thank you for having me on. I have a 2013 BMW X5 E70 model with the inline-six turbo engine, 3-liter. And I have a rough start issue. I also have a Foxwell scan tool, so not as good as the actual BMW computer, but it does go through quite a bit. I do not have any lights or notifications. I changed the coils and the plugs about 25,000 miles ago, and once it's running, it runs perfect. But every other day, every 10 starts, it gets a rough start, and I was curious if you would go to starter at that point.
I don't necessarily think starter. When you say the roughness, I'm anticipating or I'm thinking of where it kind of stumbles a little bit when you're firing the vehicle. And in that case, based on what you're describing, I think maybe the fuel injector, one or two of them, is bleeding down, meaning it's a high-pressure system. When you shut the vehicle off, it should be kind of static, but there might be an injector that's losing a little bit of pressure, so it's leaving a little bit of fuel in that cylinder. So when you go to start it, it's kind of flooded in a sense. It's trying to burn off excessive fuel, so it's going to be rough, stumbling. After a few moments, it clears itself up, and once it's running, it's fine. However, if those injectors get worse or to fail, you always run the risk of too much fuel getting into a cylinder, potentially creating like a hydrolock or a much more severe situation. So, you know, there's different ways. You can pull a plug. You can look inside of a cylinder, let it sit overnight and kind of investigate a little bit. You might be able to watch the injectors on a scan tool to see what they're doing and what kind of time that they're operating at. So based on our quick phone call here, I would say that I'm leaning towards something with a fuel injector. Obviously, you'd have to get it into your shop or dealership, have them do a little deeper digging. Probably worth getting a look into it, and likely, if you're doing one injector, you're probably going to do them all. But I think that's the first place I would investigate.
All right. Good luck with that, Billy. Thanks for the call. If you want to send your question via text instead of a call, great, 651-461-9226. Here's a text that came in a bit ago. 2012 Pilot has 160,000 miles on it. The texter noticed a bit last summer the AC wasn't really cold, but cold enough to get along. This summer, it started off good, but now it's hit or miss. Do I need an AC charge, do you think?
Well, typically what we would do is check the level, and there's not a dipstick for their conditioning. It's a sealed system, so you'd likely need to evacuate, check out the quantity of refrigerant in the system. If it was low, the next step to do is try to determine why. And that can be a little tricky. Sometimes leaks are easy to find. Sometimes it takes a little more investigating. If the refrigerant level is full, then we start to think, is there something that's turning the compressor on and off? And the compressor is what creates the cold there. So if there's something else within the vehicle that's a problem, it might be isolated and shutting that compressor off because it is an accessory. It's not required to make the vehicle run. So two different paths there, kind of depending on where we what we see when we try to do an evacuation and check that refrigerant level.
Yeah, and there's a follow-up as far as a charge, a cost. And like you said, it's a variable. You don't know what you're going to find. If there is a leak, where is it? How is it? How is it repaired? So there's still a lot of variables, no matter what we're talking about with cars, right?
Well, absolutely. And in the last handful of years, there's another newer refrigerant, which is a lesser quantity that's used. As we advance in technologies, there's always... but I would tell you on a 134A, which is most vehicles or the vehicles of yesteryear, that's probably a $150-$200 recharge. Can be more, obviously, depending on the amount of refrigerant. You know, if it has a large capacity system, it could be maybe even $300. It really depends, as you mentioned. But newer vehicles have a different refrigerant, and that can be maybe double the price. It takes less refrigerant, but it's much more costly. And the fact that there's less means that we're really particular about leaks, and that process can be a little more daunting to try to find a leak if there is one. So have it assessed. Don't overthink it. Maybe there's something as simple as an O-ring or a Schrader valve. It can be something much more extensive or expensive, but you got to start with figuring out what's going on.
So there are even in newer vehicles, there's a newer refrigerant yet.
Yes, there is. And, using general terms, I would say a vehicle that's, eight years old, the quantity of refrigerant might be a pound and a half, 2 pounds. A lot of these newer vehicles are less than a pound of refrigerant in there. Mm. And it's maybe 3 or 4 times the cost of refrigerant.
Wow.
And it's good because there's less refrigerant, there's less gases that can leak into the atmosphere. So there's positives to this stuff. Unfortunately, when things are new, they can be quite expensive. So that's the downside of it. But
yeah.
It probably is for the best.
That's the trade-off. Hang on, Nick. We're going to take a break and see what that forecast calls for. In the meantime, Nick will be taking his leave about 7:45. So if you have any kind of a car care question, we'd love to hear from you sooner rather than later. 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning once again. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. We happen to be here every Saturday right after the 7 o'clock news break with Nick Stoffel. Nick is an ASC certified technician at Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul, answering a few more questions, Nick, before we run out of time. It goes by always so quickly. Texter says this, the turn signals on my 2008 Honda Ridgeline sometimes start flickering, especially in the right side. I also have some moisture inside the right headlight. Do you think the two issues are related, or do you think they're separate problems?
Well, at first I was thinking a poor connection or contact, which that moisture can create. So, yes, I think we should determine if that headlight capsule can be dried out, blown out, or if, in fact, there's a crack or something that's allowing the moisture in there. Because keep in mind, when the headlight is on, there's a lot of heat going on inside of that capsule, and that heat will create some steam. It'll work its way into the contacts and connections, which makes them poor condition, which can create some flickering and even cause the light bulbs to burn out. So that's something you probably want to get, you know, have it looked at, try to figure out if it can be dried out or if it has to be replaced, and then you can kind of take it from there.
And as you and I have talked before, some, depending on the model and the manufacturer, some of those headlight replacements are pretty darn expensive.
You know, we kind of tease that cars are designed to be assembled, not repaired. In some cases, that's true. There are some models out there where you actually have to remove the bumper cover to replace a headlight, which seems just really silly. But the way they're designed, you don't gain any access to the back of that capsule. So sometimes you remove that whole the whole unit itself to get the bulb replaced. So some are easy. Not all of them are that bad. But there's a whole variety in different designs that we deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah. Looking at a text, Nick, good morning, guys. Says, my Toyota Highlander is equipped with the stop-start function. When I replace the battery, do I need a specific type of battery for replacement? I will be replacing before the end of summer. Thanks for such an informative show. What do you think about that? Does he need a certain type of battery?
When you look in the catalog, there will be specifications for the battery. And, you know, there's something called AGM batteries. You know, it's like a absorbed glass mat type battery. It's not just, it's, there's still acid and lead and such, but it's just designed differently. And most of the start-stop technology vehicles will have that. Some cases, they even have an auxiliary battery because there's a lot more going on with the vehicle, especially when you're restarting the vehicle at every stop. So you take it into your shop, or if you're doing it yourself, or you go to the parts store, you give them the application, the catalog will lead you in the right direction to get the right battery for the vehicle.
You and I have talked about batteries, and I know you sell really good stuff at Lloyd's. But is it fair to say that you kind of get what you pay for as far as batteries?
You know, we cover this often, you know, batteries, tires, oil. I'm a firm believer in, you know, you don't always have to get the very best brand, but you need to make sure you're buying quality stuff for your vehicle. The battery will last longer. You know, there's a lot of specifications, a lot of marketing with all three of those areas, quite honestly. And you have to trust where you're going. Talk to the dealership, the shop, the parts department, wherever you might be going, and kind of get their opinion and make your best informed decision. But I like to use quality, original equipment quality. It definitely shows over the length of the vehicle. My truck's about a 2012, and it doesn't burn any oil because I use a good quality oil. The tires last a really long time, and I plow snow and run up north and all around town with my kids, as you know. So I think it's worth the investment to spend a few extra dollars to buy the things that are better quality.
There's another question that we get from time to time. I haven't seen or heard for years, but basically digging through this entire paragraph, the texter wants to know, with all the different gas stations, the discount places and the big box, you know, all these different where you can buy gasoline, does the quality differ is basically their question. Is it better to go certain places rather than others, I guess, is their question.
You know, that's a matter of opinion there, obviously. But I think my best advice is go to a place that's busy, that they're replenishing that fuel. There's not a lot of stagnant fuel sitting in their tanks, which are in the ground. Can create some condensation, some moisture potential issues. So, you know, I wouldn't always chase a nickel to drive across town because you probably use more fuel to save that nickel.
That's right.
However, if a place is busy, you know, and it's a branded place, that's what I do. I don't go to only one place. I just try to stay on the places that are on the main highway. Don't, you know, get back in the backwoods, find a, you know, something off the road there. So that's just my two cents, I guess.
Okay. Final question. 2016 Kia, my lights don't come on when turned to auto. Maybe it's just too bright.
Yeah, it might be too bright. There's a light sensor likely on the dash. The switch itself, you know, that might be creating some problem there for you. So there's a couple different directions that go there. You know, you have the, once again, the schematic, the resources to do some testing there to determine if the input from the sensor is not making it back to the switch or the computer, or if when you're switching it, rotating the switch itself, if those contacts are worn out and it's not seen, that you have it on the auto setting. So there's a couple different directions you could be headed there.
All right. And if there are issues the folks want to bring in their vehicle to see you guys at Lloyd's, how do we do that?
Absolutely. Feel free to call. Ask a couple questions here if you need to. 651-228-1316. If you're out for a walk on Grand Avenue at the corner of Grand and Chatsworth, 982 Grand, stop and say hi. And once again, as always, I'd appreciate if you checked out our website at lloydsautomotive.net.
We will do that very thing, Nick, and we hope you can come back next Saturday.
Only if you have me.
We will do that. All right, it's a deal. Thank you. Nick Stoffel, again, ASC Certified Technician at Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Now, Jack Farrell standing by with his wine check next. Jack Farrell, of course, from Haskell's fame. And then get those lawn and garden questions ready. Julie Weisenhorn will be in next hour for our Smart Garden Show. That's straight ahead. Here on News Talk 830 WCCO.